Hello, I'm Jeremiah. You are listening to Christian Anarchy. Both the person and the podcast have innumerable imperfections, but hey, at least neither supports violence against you.
We begin with concluding remarks. Break up the pieces and examine the parts. Your words always cut when they're cliche. But here's my knife because I came for the buffet. This is the way it goes when you are part of it. Nervously saying words, then also surprising bed. A mark beneath the chin. I've caught you once again. It's in the way you sell.
After a long weekend of camping in a lovely campground and hiking in some tree-covered Kentucky hills, I'm ready to finish up what we began last week in our conversation about the environment. And by our conversation, I mean my monologue I so graciously make available for you to listen to. By the way, thanks for taking the time to listen, y'all. Last week, I talked about a handful of the many government failings in protecting the environment. This week, I'm going to discuss how the environment might be protected in a free society. Any society's primary concern about the well-being of the environment is really a concern about the well-being of people. The earth is the place where people live, and keeping the earth in a state where people can continue to live there is the main concern for environmental well-being. We want the air, water, plants, animals, and ground to be protected so the human race can continue to grow and thrive on this planet. The first reason we should be concerned about the environment is because the environment is where people live. For many people, in theory, especially Christians, there is a secondary concern about the well-being of the environment because of compassion for the non-human elements of the environment itself. In the beginning, humanity was given dominion over the land and over the plants and over the animals. This does mean using and changing and working with and manipulating the earth for our benefit, but this role of ruler over creation also includes the role of caring for it. We should care for creation not just for the sake of humanity, but also for the sake of creation itself. The primary concern for maintaining sustainable environmental practices, the welfare of people, should be dealt with through the enforcement of law. By law, I really mean applying the non-aggression principle, which, I will repeat, is the ethical principle which states it is wrong to initiate coercion on others. If you recall from two episodes ago, one has a right to not have their property aggressed against, damaged, or otherwise interfered with by someone else. In the same way no one has the right to aggress against my body, which I own, no one has a right to aggress against the land I own. If one considers these ideas I discussed about property rights with respect to environmental protection, I hope from one's mind some potential solutions will start to emerge as to how the environment can be protected without aggression. Property rights cover all sorts of potential acts of pollution and make acts of pollution acts of aggression. If there is a stream running through my land and someone upstream dumps a bunch of chemicals into it and kills the fish or otherwise devalues my portion of the stream, they have damaged my property. The same goes for affecting the groundwater I am using for my well, or in some way contaminating the soil on my property. If their actions create a lot of clouds, which interfere with my use of my property, then they are also guilty of aggression. If someone is putting a lot of pollutants into the air, which have a detrimental impact on my land or on my person, then they have initiated force against me and what I own, and have violated the non-aggression principle. And so the use of defensive force to prevent their future aggressions and seek restitution is justified. As I mentioned when I talked about land ownership rights, I would suggest mechanisms for enforcing these property rights similar to what I suggested with regards to the thief in episode 11. It is likely most people will either pay for some sort of security agency to protect their property, who will also be in charge of protecting their property from pollution, or people will be a part of some local voluntary collective who work together to help protect each other's property rights and seek justice when such rights have been violated. When pollution has harmed someone else or their property, the first step is to figure out who did the damage, be able to explain how, and gather evidence to back such an assertion. Then the evidence should be taken to the person who destroyed the property with a proposal for them to cease their destruction and to pay restitution. Perhaps the restitution will be financial, maybe it will be fixing the wrongs they created, or maybe the victim will be satisfied if the perpetrator simply stops doing more damage. If the person they brought the evidence to does not think they are guilty, then both parties should meet in a court or with some other third party to help determine the extent of the crime and what a just punishment would be. I'm sure there are some who are wondering why the person or organization who damaged someone else's property would willingly go to court or agree to third-party arbitration in the first place. Without government, how can we be assured people will even show up when someone is bringing a case against them? Who will force them to face up to their actions? In a free society, there will still be organizations, whether private companies or groups of people, who use collective power through voluntary associations to seek justice when a perpetrator has victimized someone. These groups will be willing to use defensive force to rectify rights violations if strong enough evidence is presented that one person has aggressed against another, and refusing to go to court is very often a sure sign of guilt. So this use of force to seek restitution is an option, but the threat of force is not the only compelling reason for people to show up to court. I don't know if I explained this very much when I talked about law in a free society, but I don't remember doing so. There are many reasons people will be self-motivated to willingly subject themselves to some sort of third-party dispute resolver, whether it be a court, an arbitration organization, or a mutual friend. Some of you may think this first reason is a weak one, and I may be mistaken about it, but I think people will be motivated to subject themselves to a third-party dispute resolution organization because they want to be good people toward other people. I want to treat others with kindness. I want to treat them and their property with respect. I want to have at least friendly relationships with everyone if possible. I certainly don't want to do damage to the things they own. You are probably a lot like me. Most people are. I think the conscience of people leads to generally good and socially helpful behavior most of the time. Many people are not like this, of course. They are not motivated by their own conscience. But thankfully, other motivating factors exist as well. If a person has damaged the property of another and refuses to pay them with restitution and to subject themselves to a third party, they are going to have a very difficult time doing business with anyone else in the future. If someone is known for violating the rights of others and refusing to be held accountable for their actions, very few people are going to want to do business with them if they can avoid it. People don't want to make deals with untrustworthy people. It is often too risky to do business with someone who doesn't respect the rights of others, because why would they respect your rights if they don't have to? If they are willing to hurt someone else, they are probably willing to screw you over on a deal too. For them to become people others want to do business with, they are going to need to submit to some sort of arbitration. Among those companies this person might want to do business with, who will very likely refuse, are security companies of various kinds. In a free society, many resolutions of rights violations will be handled by the companies who are paid to protect people and enforce their property rights on behalf of their customers. These companies will be frequently interacting with one another to solve these issues in the most efficient way possible, in ways which benefit the customer base of both companies the most. Neither a security company nor a voluntary collective who get together to help protect each other and each other's property are going to want to have as a customer or a member someone who doesn't respect the rights of others or show up for court dates. Such a bad actor will greatly burden anyone responsible for protecting their property, as such a person will create conflict with others and will likely experience the use of defensive force from them. So the perpetrator who hurt another person's property is going to have a very hard time finding people willing to protect his. In addition, someone who refuses adjudication when they are seen to be the guilty party is going to have a hard time getting others to accept adjudication when the others are perceived to be the guilty party. What if someone does come onto his property, breaks into his house, and steals stuff from him? If he tries to take the person to a private court or arbitration agency, it is likely a third-party agency will even take his case until he settles his previous one that he refused to show up to. And the person who doesn't go to arbitration will appear to be guilty by nearly everyone. Not only will this be an unpleasant experience for them, but they will not experience much sympathy if something bad happens to their stuff in the future. This means that they will be especially vulnerable to things like theft and property violations because they lack community support if something does happen. After all, if they are disrespecting the rights of others, then what right have they to expect others respect their rights? None at all. They will be left with very few options if they are wronged by someone else. People are generally not going to want to put themselves in these vulnerable positions, and so people are generally going to willingly, even if begrudgingly, go through third-party dispute resolution when it comes to issues of doing environmental damage to someone else's land. Even if they choose not to, because they have aggressed against another human being, their victim has the right to use defensive force or to have others use defensive force on his or her behalf to seek justice from their rights violator. I think the use of force is an option of last resort which need not be used under most circumstances. The enforcement of property rights will do a lot to protect the environment. In a society with strongly respected and protected property rights, individuals and companies who may be given to high levels of pollution will be highly motivated to prevent their pollution before it starts and minimize whatever environmental damage their pollution might do. We all know there will be some pollution and some environmental damage in a free society, just like there is now. But we can handle a major portion of potential pollutants without aggression, simply through the enforcement of property rights. Government often functions to take away the property rights of owners, and to make it more difficult for those who are being affected by pollution to bring their case to court and receive compensation for the damages which have been caused to their property, and to have the polluter cease damaging their land. Ironically, the ability of polluters to damage the property of others and get away without repercussions are often caused by government regulations related to environmental protection. Because the law of the government is the highest law of the land and is more powerful and deemed higher than property rights of people, people and companies who are polluting do not need to make sure they aren't harming the air, land, and water of others. They merely need to make sure they are obeying all the government regulations. If the government laws allow them a certain amount of pollution, even if it harms others, then it becomes far more difficult to hold the company accountable because in the eyes of the law, they have done nothing wrong. One example of this is large industrial pig farms in North Carolina. The following is from an article about these farms turning pig sewage into a mist. The North Carolina Department of Environment and Natural Resources treats large swine farms, operations with thousands of pigs and up, as non-discharge facilities, exempt from state rules on having to monitor the waste they dump in rivers and streams. Thousands of huge pig farms in North Carolina are spraying untreated animal waste into the air and contaminating neighboring communities. Mark DeVries, who shot a shocking aerial video with a spy drone, told RT, "This environmental problem has for some reason received very little attention in the American press. These pools are near people's homes, people's schools, people's neighborhoods," DeVries said in an interview Monday to RT. "And in order to get rid of these giant open-air cesspools, the manure is actually sprayed into the air with giant spraying devices, which causes it to turn into a fine mist. Spread by the wind later on, the mist containing pig waste has serious health impacts and also deeply affects people's lives," he said. "There have been studies investigating respiratory diseases, such as childhood asthma, which is quite common in the area, along with blood pressure problems." "You think it's raining," said Elsie Herring, a woman who lives near a pig farm in the video. "We don't open the doors or the windows, but the odor still comes in. It takes your breath away." "I was shocked," DeVries commented in his video. "Pig manure is fairly similar to human waste, so it would be similar to having a pit of untreated human sewage the size of several football fields out in the open, and in many cases, right in the vicinity of people's homes." Describing the situation with air pollution, the chemicals, and the smell as lax, DeVries said that North Carolina has a law that makes it more difficult for local residents to take the pig farms to court over the waste. "The law is really acting on the side of these giant industrial pig farms, and the neighbors have very little, if any, reprieve," he said. "I hope that with my investigation and with others, there will be more public discussion and thus more pressure on these corporations to change and improve their practices." Now, the law I think they are referring to, the one that makes it hard to take these giant pig farmers to court, is a law which allows the biggest industrial pig farms to be exempt from disposing of the pig manure elsewhere through a pipeline or by trucking it out. The reason the largest of these companies are exempt from such laws is that they are so big, it is deemed to be too difficult to deal with all their manure by shipping it out or running it through a pipe. So because they have so much poop, they are exempt from dealing with it in the more costly ways smaller farms have to. This is pretty typical of how governments function from local to national. They make special exemptions for the largest of companies, which give the biggest businesses a financial break that the smaller ones do not get. Usually, although I did not do the research to know if this particular case is an example, one can trace special government regulations which benefit a particular industry or the largest companies within an industry directly to lobbyists. The largest of companies can afford to receive special protections from the law and special competitive advantage over other companies by buying a few politicians. The lady in the article says sometimes when she goes outside, it seems like it's raining because of the mist. Imagine being sprayed with pig feces and having very little chance to take this company to court and receive payment for damages because the laws of your government trump your basic human rights as an individual to not have your property so invaded. What a crappy situation. In this case, the government undermines property rights, which could much more easily be exercised to protect the environment if the government had not intervened. The government often supersedes basic human rights, which will be far more powerful in a free society. In cases like the pig poo spraying, this superseding functions to contribute to the destruction of the environment. These government laws contribute to the ruining of the environment in ways which directly harm people and damage their property. So there are some cases where government uses coercion to create a unique situation which protects the destruction of the environment in ways it would not be protected in a free society because it is harming people. However, the concern for a human's well-being is not the only legitimate concern for the environment. The second reason for caring for the environment, for the sake of the environment itself, should be dealt with through businesses and charities. With pollution, there will not always be a clear victim or group of victims who can make a case against the polluter. And so, some pollution can happen without people being able to stop it without violating the rights of the polluter. This is where charities can come in. Many groups exist even now, when the perception that the government is protecting the land is widespread, who purchase large tracts of land and preserve it. Some of these are open to the public, some are not. They both serve the purpose of protecting the earth, the plants, the air, the water, and the animals. These are honorable pursuits and good things to do. And I think in a free society, because there will not be this perception that the government's taking care of everything, people will do more of it even than they're doing now. And I think engaging in ventures like private nature preserves is a part of what it means to bear the image of God and to reign over creation the way God made us to and asked us to. When people or organizations homestead or purchase land, they turn the land from an unowned resource into an owned one. What this does is to create a potential victim in the case of any future pollution of the land by people who do not own the property. The more land is owned by someone or some group of people who have motivation to keep it in good condition and suitable for humanity, the more land will be protected through the exercising of property rights. But charities and private property owners aren't the only examples of people who will want to keep land pristine. Thousands of potential for-profit businesses require large areas of land which are relatively unchanged by humans or only modified in very minor ways, leaving the vast majority of the land untouched. To discover what these businesses might include, one only needs to think of some of the outdoor activities people engage in and are willing to pay to do. In case you're curious about them, I'll list a handful. You have hiking, fishing, cross-country skiing, hunting, ATVing, snowmobiling, trapping, camping, biking, paintballing, climbing, downhill skiing, finding plants or funguses which are valuable and only grow in the forest, horseback riding, safaris, and otherwise just seeing and appreciating nature and scenic views. If people want to do something, then other people can make money by maintaining an environment where such an activity is possible. If people can make money through preserving nature, and they can, then they will. Other businesses rely on things we would generally consider to be nature in order to exist. Agricultural farmers rely on the constant production of plants and keeping the soil in good enough condition where it grows crops well. This also includes keeping water in good condition and the air in good condition and the sky clear and the ozone layer intact. Paper manufacturers rely on trees to create paper, and so while they are constantly harvesting trees, they are always planting more and waiting for them to grow, creating habitats for other plants and animals until the trees are ready to be cut down. This is also the case for the logging industry, which uses trees to make wood for various forms of construction, decoration, or other building of desirable products like furniture. In order for companies who sell wood like oak or walnut or other wood which takes a long time to grow, they need a forest. If a company owns a limited portion of land, for them to continue to make money off of the land, they need to plant more of these trees as they harvest them. In the present world, most logging doesn't work this way. Because the state and federal governments in places like the U.S. own 40% of the land, and a good portion of the land they own is trees, they sell or lease the trees to these logging companies. When the logging companies don't own the land, they have no motivation to ensure the land produces for them in the future. And so they just take down the trees and abandon it. The government policies actually function to encourage less environmentally friendly logging practices than would be the case if the logging companies owned the land they were taking the trees from. The point I am attempting to make is a lot of businesses rely on the protection of nature in order to make a profit, and thus will be motivated to maintain the well-being of the environment. Additionally, businesses are motivated to avoid mass destruction of the environment on their own property, even if they own large areas of land, even if they aren't damaging the property of others, and even if their business has nothing to do with maintaining the environment. There are at least three reasons for this. People don't like mass environmental destruction. Customers don't like it. Employees don't like it. All other things being equal, the majority would rather buy from a company who does less damage to the environment, and most employees would rather work for a company who does less damage. So if there is another competing company who treats the environment better and can get the word out about that, they are going to get better employees and more customers on average. And two, purposeless environmental destruction devalues the land. Minimal damage to the environment around a business will make sure the land retains its value should the business want to sell the land or mortgage the property for a loan. And three, environmental destruction for no reason costs money. If a company is destroying forest habitat to construct a building, they aren't going to destroy any more than they have to. They aren't going to build a parking lot larger than necessary. They won't make roads wider than they must. Modifying nature takes work, and work requires money, and money isn't something people like wasting for no reason. While the existence of businesses of various types often has some negative environmental effects, it would be counterproductive for most to engage in any sort of widespread detrimental environmental destruction. I know we've covered a lot already today, but let's talk about one final hypothetical, a dramatic scenario involving environmental damage which may occur in a free society without conceivable grounds for any repercussions. What if someone in a free society does destroy the environment on their property? Let's say there's this insane person who has a vendetta against Mother Earth because his own mother died in a hurricane and his father in a flood. He has respect for other people and their property, but hates nature. So he sets to enacting his revenge on the world. He buys up a few acres of land. He encloses his land so as not to damage the property of others. Then he cuts down the trees and burns them on his grass inside of a sealed glass dome. He poisons the soil. He kills all the animals and the insects and the plants on his property. A small pond is also on his land. He pours so much bleach into it that everything in the water dies, and the water becomes unfit for any purpose except sanitizing something. This man is a menace to all of the nature he owns. But he is not a menace to society. He is very destructive to himself. Severely damaging one's own property devalues it and makes it useless for him. He wastes a lot of his time engaging in counterproductive activity. He is harming the land directly without reason, which is quite sad. However, he isn't hurting anyone. He isn't violating someone else's rights. In this scenario, there is no way to use force to stop this man without violating his rights because he has not victimized anyone. We may not like his actions and find his destruction of himself and his property to be disturbing, but we have no grounds to stop him. I would suggest society do things to discourage behavior like this, even more so than the natural negative repercussions, which are already in place, like eliminating your own wealth by damaging your land. And that alone can be a pretty strong deterrent. But I would also suggest various forms of ostracism, like refusing to do business with him if he doesn't stop his environmental destruction, publicly making known his destruction through local news organizations or something of the like, I think would also be helpful. Perhaps trying to convince others to avoid relationship with him until he starts acting less destructively toward the earth would be a deterrent as well. The purpose of these things isn't to be mean to this guy, but to incentivize good behavior and create negative repercussions for bad behavior without the use and threat of violence. There are many peaceful options a society has to encourage behaviors which are helpful and discourage behaviors which are not, even if said behaviors are not violating the rights of others. But any initiation of violence on this person who has not violated the rights of others would be wrong and a violation of the non-aggression principle. This doesn't mean he is acting rightly or ethically or morally. It simply means you would not be acting rightly to use coercion to prevent him from his property destruction. If you support the existence of a government for the purpose of protecting the environment, then you are much more of a destructive force in a civilized society than the vengeful polluter. Not only do you support the initiation of violent force against this guy to keep him from damaging his own property, but you also support such violence used against others. For the government to exist to protect the environment, then the government needs to initiate violent force on peaceful people to pay for it, most of whom probably love the environment and want it cared for, some of whom donate money for its protection. If you say government is necessary to protect the environment from bad actors, then you are saying it is necessary to threaten good actors with violence to protect the environment. Even more than this, you support the initiation of violence to fund an organization to protect the environment, which, as discussed last week, doesn't even do that good of a job of it. This is far more uncivilized and socially destructive than a man destroying his own land. Please do not seek to argue for the government's necessity because you value a plant being treated rightly more than a person being treated rightly. I understand having compassion for animals and thinking there is something really special and worth preserving about vast expanses of land where there has been minimal interference by humans. But no matter how much one loves the trees, how can they hold a gun to someone's head to coerce them to stop destroying them? Especially if they aren't hurting others. How can one justify such behavior? While I understand most wouldn't actually be the person holding the gun, many would support the government doing it. This is just a way of pretending one's hands are clean by giving the dirty jobs to another, creating distance from one's action. And the actual coercion doesn't make the person who supports the coercion innocent. Again, I definitely think we should work to disincentivize the behavior of destroying the environment, even on one's own property, and work toward incentivizing the maintenance of the Earth's well-being. We should work together for the creation of a system which encourages long-term sustainability. But not a system which relies on violence for its very existence. A system with a foundation of violence that feeds on violence for its survival and growth. Let's be civil toward one another and make the world using better means, using peaceful methods. I will link to another helpful resource on the episode page for this podcast. I asked some friends to guide me to some other good resources on environmental protection in a free society, so those who want to learn more can. One of them linked me to an article by Murray Rothbard that I skimmed through it and was pretty decent, and I'll share it. I have put the link to this article on the page for episode 14 of the podcast. If you want to get to it easily, just go to christianarchy.net and search for episode 14, and it'll pop right up. Murray Rothbard is a famous anarchist economist, as famous as those can get, who was very prolific over the course of the previous century. The quantity and the quality of his work have since declined due to being deceased for 20 years, but he has a lot of good stuff out there if you're interested in reading extensive books about the economics of anarchy. If you want to get a hold of me, send an email at jeremiahjm@gmail.com. I will read and respond to all emails that are sent, gladly answer any questions or discuss any topic with you either through email or on this podcast. As always, I value your time and your ears. And I thank you for giving me a little bit of both every week. Enjoy your weekend. Be good.